Despite the threat of racist political candidates, New Orleans lives on as the birthplace of jazz. Mark Warden reports.
Most Americans were horrified last year when David Duke, a former Nazi and Ku Klux Klan member, was chosen as the Republican candidate in the Louisiana gubernatorial election. Although Duke was subsequently defeated by a Democrat of dubious repute, a warning had been sounded. Nowhere was the sense of relief greater than in New Orleans's large black community. It was in this community that jazz music was born. With Duke as governor, it could well have died. Jazz and New Orleans are synonymous. This lively city at the mouth of the Mississippi gave us such legends as Jelly Roll Morton, Buddy Bolden, and the much-loved Louis Armstrong. Music is still everywhere. Soulful saxophones, swinging clarinets, and Dixieland pianos play round the clock in the bars and cafes and on street corners. No wonder the Louisiana City is considered one of the world's most entertaining places, especially next month during Mardi Gras, when only carnival time in Rio comes close in terms of sheer revelry. Why jazz developed here rather than anywhere else in the South is not fully understood, but the permissiveness of its society certainly helped. Even the etymology of the word jazz is a mystery. Some people have argued that it comes from an African tribal language. According to Danny Barker, an 82-year-old banjo player who has played with such legends as Louis Armstrong, jazz was originally a New Orleans slang term for sex.
Jazz doesn't mean you're jazzing a woman. You know, when you're screwing a woman, jazz, the first time I heard it, but they don't never hit the hit on that. Jazz is a word that meant a song. So when I was a little kid, you know, I said, see Sarah Jackson? You know who's jazzing her? Who? Willie Brown.
Jazz, in the musical sense of the word, plays a major role in the New Orleans economy. Bands are employed to lure customers to the bars and restaurants of the French Quarter, and on a larger scale, the music also entices tourists to New Orleans. In spite of this, the city authorities give very little support to the jazz fraternity.
But the city does not present jazz like it should. For some reason, I guess one reason, because it's black music. If it was white music, it would have everything here. But it's black, and some people's power structures sort of restrict how far you go with this. They got the great, big, beautiful Armstrong Park. Nothing's in there. See, if that was Armstrong, it was a Nick LaRocca Park or another band, or New Orleans Rhythm Kings that created jazz, they would be there, like in Nashville, you understand? Nashville's all white.
Nevertheless, these are relatively good times for jazz musicians. The advent of the compact disc has revolutionized the recording industry. Old records that were once impossible to find are now available for a few dollars. Interest in traditional jazz has mushroomed, and many contemporary performers have reaped the rewards. The trumpeter Wynton Marsalis is one of the leading lights of this renaissance. A son of New Orleans, Marsalis is said to be worth several million dollars. For a young jazz artist, this is remarkable. Brass bands are also enjoying a revival. So, is it fair to say that jazz is alive and well in New Orleans?
Hey, rock, roll, hey, rock. I would say it's alive and kicking. You know, it has a lot of problems. There are a lot of problems here with the music. But it's kicking, it's vigorous. You know, it's very much alive. 15 years ago, brass bands were, you know, if you could find 10 brass bands at any one time, it was probably impossible because it was just not happening that much. Now, there are brass bands all over the place. Young kids, you know, I mean, we're talking about their bands with young teenagers and sub-teens, composed entirely of young teenagers and sub-teens. It's also a phenomenon in which it's multi-generational. So you'll have somebody who's 70 years old marching right next to somebody who's 19 years old, 18 or 19 years old or younger, and they're playing, learning from each other, the youngster learning from the elder, and the elder being invigorated by the presence of the youth. It's just a tremendous phenomena that is not, that I think that's also one of the reasons why people are interested in New Orleans, because there's a vitality that's still happening with the music, which is the sort of the opposite of this, what do you call it, sophisticated jadedness that you find in among musicians in many other places, you know.
The Rebirth Brass Band offers a good example of what's happening in New Orleans. The group is composed of young men in their late teens and early 20s. They often play in their baseball caps, t-shirts, and colored scarves. Indeed, if they didn't have their instruments with them, you could almost mistake them for a street gang. And yet they are playing some of the finest music in New Orleans. The group's leader, Philip Frazier, lives in a housing project in one of the city's rougher neighborhoods. When I informed the doorman at the fancy Royal Sonesta Hotel on Bourbon Street that I wanted to take a cab to the area in question, his eyes almost popped out. Later, Philip Frazier talked about one of New Orleans' most fascinating rituals, the jazz funeral.
I've played many funerals. Close people to myself. We don't play, jazz funerals of people who were in the field of jazz that had passed away. We don't play funerals of ordinary deaths, and we don't also play a lot of funerals of drug and related killers. A lot of youthful people at the time was getting killed over drugs, and we was hired to play their funeral, you know, to try to lift up everybody. And we don't play funerals of close friends of ours, so we don't play all types. Sometimes we might get two funerals in a day. Sometimes, at one point during the summertime, I could get a funeral every other Saturday, you know, so.
For all of New Orleans' jollity, death is a recurrent theme. The city is one of the poorest and most violent in America, but never more so than in recent years.
Well, I think you have, again, this dualism of deterioration giving rise to great creative proclivity, if you like. In a way, it's an old world city for that reason, because plagues, hurricanes, tornadoes, natural disasters go hand in hand with the history of New Orleans. And the population here has always lived, in other words, very close to death. The reason they celebrate life so much with their festival traditions, Mardi Gras, St. Patrick's Day, St. Joseph's Day, you drop a pin and a brass band is going to show up to celebrate it. This sort of celebration of life, I think, is our way of dealing with the omnipresence of death and the potential for disaster at all time, which keeps changing. It used to be natural, now it's more social. If you've seen the reports on what's been happening in the projects and throughout the city relative to the crack epidemic and the violence there, most of us would probably prefer a grade 7 hurricane to walking through one of these projects while a crack deal is going down. But the danger is part of the allure I think. This attraction of death and the attraction of a sort of eating death in life. I mean, maybe the restaurants of New Orleans also play a role in all this too. What you might call the the visceral sensibilities of New Orleans are always well fed. It's a bodily city, if you like, and yet there's a spiritual aura to it.
This juxtaposition of the spiritual and the sensual is also apparent in the music. Gospel, for example, is church music, but with a strong sexual rhythm. Blues, on the other hand, is sublimely sinful. And what of jazz, which grew up in the brothels of New Orleans' Storyville district? Is it more spiritual or sexual?
Oh, they go side by side. Some of the greatest musicians, you know, they play them gospel tunes, and they jazz them up. They play a gospel tune like you play a blues. Well, a friend we had, Jesus. Play this like you would play a blues. Oh, my woman's gone away. Same thing. What you learned it in the church, and you take that same feeling you had with you, you're oppressed already because you're black, and you go over there where other people are, and you play the same feeling on the blues.
In the Afrocentric world, it's not either or, it's both and. And that's always been an element of what we do as a people. The separation of the sacred and the secular is an artificial separation. And most of our people subconsciously and unconsciously do not relate to that artificial separation. Although, because of the dominance of the society we live in, we do give what would be called lip service to it. But if you listen to the music, and as the famous lyric, you know, ball all day Saturday and go to fall down on my knees and pray on Sunday, you know. I mean, it's there. I mean, that's because religion, the spiritual side of things, for an Afrocentric perspective, goes throughout everything, and vice versa. The celebration of the physical goes throughout everything also. So it's not one or the other. I mean, jazz would not be jazz if it was one or the other. And what makes it the music so vital is it's all of it. It's all there.